Have you ever watched any of YouTube's original content?
Nope, I haven't. Not a single one. I've seen lots of ads for them, though.
Why do you still see ads?
I just see them. I mean, occasionally I'll see a YouTube Originals ad in like a YouTube video that I'm watching.
Wait, you don't use YouTube Red? Is this?
I don't actually. I don't have YouTube Red.
What?
That's the one subscription that I don't pay for. Actually,
why not? What is your rationale? What is wrong with you?
I don't really have a rationale behind it. It's just kind of like all of those microaggressions, I guess you could say, of having to deal with, or micro annoyances, I guess, of having to deal with those YouTube ads every day, haven't gotten me to the point yet where I subscribed. Like, I just haven't gotten there.
YouTube without ads is so much better. It's
no, I understand. Shocking. I had a trial for like a month at one point, or maybe it was 3 months. I don't know. And I loved it. But I don't know. I always look at subscription services of all kinds, and this is actually perfect, you know, for this intro, for talking about the Apple stuff that happened this week and everything else that's been relevant. It's like with services, it's such a slippery slope, right? Like if you justify one, then you're justifying. I mean, I try to think of things in annual cost. So like I'm in a split moment decision or split second decision, I can justify spending $120 for the year on YouTube Red. And I'm not saying it's not worth it, but if I let myself just do that every time I get annoyed at something on the internet, then I'm going to be subscribed to everything. I'm going to bump up my Hulu subscription, and I'm going to bump up all my other, you know, and then I'm going to do, and I've also been tempted, I mean, this is a kind of unrelated, but I've also been tempted to have both a Spotify and an Apple Music subscription, because all of my stuff is on Spotify, and I prefer Spotify just in general, because obviously it works with my entire Google ecosystem products and Apple Music doesn't. But I like running with my Apple Watch, and there's no Spotify app for Apple Watch. So I've kind of had that similar tension too, of like, I've strongly considered getting both of those. And up to now, I've kept myself from being an Apple Music subscriber, just like I've kept myself from being YouTube Red or YouTube Premium or whatever they're calling it these days. Yeah.
You just said a lot of words, and I still can't get over the fact that you don't subscribe to no ads YouTube. This is shocking.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. Okay. But $120 a year, I mean, that's like Amazon Prime. Do I get the same amount of value from no ads on YouTube that I get from Amazon Prime?
Yes. It's a world of difference.
I don't think so. Maybe I don't watch enough YouTube.
Every single time I switch to our YouTube account to upload a video, I see ads, and it's a different world. It's okay. This is truly upsetting and shocking. But anyways, YouTube original content. I have watched one show. It's watchable. It's bingeable. I watch an entire show all the way through. Let me get that out of the way. It's fine. It's fine. It was called Impulse. It was done by the guy who did the Bourne Legacy, one of the Jason Bourne movies. Anyways, it's like an example of high end content. That and Cobra Kai was the Google's other most successful original content push. But anyways, news emerged this week. Well, it's been building up that YouTube is getting out of the prestige television game. They're no longer accepting pitches for high-end shows that are expensive. They're still going to do content, but the way I see it is they're doing more YouTube-y viral stuff that will become popular with the YouTube creator audience. Maybe YouTube realizes there's a genuine audience generational gap in terms of what content people expect to watch. Maybe the younger generations aren't as interested in like whatever HBO does, but I don't know. There's a whole other discussion there. But the point is that YouTube is pulling out of high-end content, and they've never been successful at it, obviously, YouTube, but in the context of every other single technology company getting into that space, into making their own original content, funding their original content, I think it's a very sore gap for Google not to have this kind of offering.
Yeah, I think that you just hit the nail on the head, though, because I think I mean, I don't know anything about this space. I mean, any deeper than anyone else that's a full-time technology blogger. So I don't really know. So correct me if I'm wrong. Feel free to tell me how dumb I am. But I think that you hit the nail on the head talking about funding. I think money is really the sticking point here. And I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like the last few years, Google has been much more fiscally responsible than it has been in the past. And I feel like they're much more careful about where they throw their money. Even the Alphabet reorganization, just on a high level, was kind of an example of that, you know, toning down X and pulling it out of Google and, you know, forcing it to be its own standalone entity, and then taking all these other companies and forcing them to become profitable on their own. And, you know, I just think Google in general has become more responsible. And I don't disagree that it's a kind of a sore spot that they're not going to have the Netflix or the Amazon Prime Video or the Apple TV Plus competitor, apparently. I don't know. Them pulling out of it as of this report, which, by the way, Google denied in a vague way, so we don't really know. It's still kind of up in the air what is and isn't true with it, but I think it is true. It seems to me, and
no more big budget stuff is the
distinction. Yeah, it does seem true that there's no more big budget stuff, which is really, I mean, that's what Amazon and Apple and Netflix, et cetera, are all doing. I don't know. This is not a good comparison at all, so forgive me, but I think it's kind of similar to the whole tablet thing. Like, I guess in that case, Apple's just like the sole player, but, you know, Google has just kind of given up on that, it seems like, with a similar report that came out recently, that seems like they're going to pull the reins or pull back on that a little bit. I just think there's lots of examples on a high level of Google doing this and just being responsible and seeing what is and isn't working. And I'm guessing, I mean, they're an extremely data-driven company, just like every company in 2019. But I think, you know, if they're doing this, they've got to have data that shows, man,
absolutely,
they just don't have the right talent and they just don't have the right, you know, chops to really be able to compete. I think that if they thought they could compete, then they would keep, you know, it's like a matter of just putting gasoline on the fire, right?
My response to that is money. It's all you need to compete. Like, if you offer enough money, you just let your creative talents do whatever they want. I think you'll end up with a good show that people want to watch eventually. That being said, I think that YouTube Premium, it's so hard to remember what to call this, is they have a big enough attractor in not having and removing ads, that could be the point of this service existing, along with YouTube Premium is $11.99. It includes all the free music stuff. So I think that's a big enough reason for it to continue existing. But it's just a shame that Google is not playing in content, because content, having a good show, it's like, it brings up your prestige. Maybe Google doesn't need that, but it makes you a talking point. Imagine having that YouTube logo appearing before your favorite show every single time. I think there's something there in terms of like building a relationship with the audience, YouTube especially. So,
yeah, I feel like I think this is much harder than people give it credit for. I mean, I even thinking about Amazon Prime Video, if you're walking down the street and you ask someone, what is the best Amazon Prime Video original series? I mean, I think the vast majority of people would not even be able to name one.
The one that won all the Emmys. Marvelous Miss Maisel.
You can't even name it.
Because it's confusing. But it's won a lot of Emmys.
I mean, I think the one that people know about right now is that Jack Ryan show, because it's Jim and because Amazon has advertised and marketed the hell out of it.
I think that's just...
But other than that, I'm not saying that they don't have... That might just be us, but yeah. I do think that Amazon has marketed that one. Like, I think I've seen ads everywhere. Maybe because...
Also, it's good.
Maybe just because Big Data knows that I watch The Office all the time and they're just, you know, I don't know. But Yeah, I mean, I just think what I'm saying is, like, even Amazon doesn't have, like, I mean, think about Netflix. Netflix has stuff that's, like, that are cultural icons already. I mean, the most obvious example is Stranger Things. Like, that is... That is a Netflix show that is a cultural phenomenon, right? And Amazon doesn't really have a cultural phenomenon yet. And Amazon has been pouring way more money than Google ever did and has been pouring more money for way longer than Google has or will. So I think that's just a testament to just how difficult it really is to get the right talent and really break into this, into this space.
Yeah, but on services... I guess we should discuss a tiny bit about Apple and their whole big services push this week. So, do you want to start in chronological order or just the biggest points? Which
confession?
You and I
didn't actually watch the event.
You didn't miss much.
Apparently,
you didn't.
But it started with Apple News Plus, right? Which, I mean, I mean, all I have to say about that is, Apple's taking 50% cut from publishers that are already bleeding, and that's just a shame considering Apple's stockpile of cash.
And what's interesting to me is if Google ends up pulling Google News from Europe because of the copyright directive backlash, that'd be an interesting thing to see what happens in terms of Apple News Plus probably gaining popularity.
Yeah, maybe. But there's also the Apple Arcade. Not coming till later this fall, and it's apparently actually has a Google tie-in that we can talk about. You and Dylan both found evidence of some kind of app/game subscription service in the Play Store app, right? In APK Insight. Last October, and nothing has materialized from that. That just kind of did those strings disappear from the app, or are they just sitting dormant? And do you know?
I think it's dormant, but I haven't checked recently. But yeah, so Google Play Pass was the name, so presumably some kind of subscription service where you get access to games. In another example. Well, what Apple's doing is not an example of them making content, of them funding studios to make exclusive games for their service for iOS. And I think if Google were to do a similar service, I think Apple's would be more successful, because in terms of those premium experiences that can be found on iOS compared to Android gaming, and how even though on both platforms, iApps in-app purchases are the most popular form to make money, I think Apple obviously has more premium games, premium experiences, customers more likely to pay.
Yeah, there are more developers that have good relationships with, I guess, I don't. It's weird to say relationships with the App Store, but I think that in a lot of ways, game developers see more success on the App Store, especially when we're talking about these higher end. There's more people on iOS that are willing to pay higher end prices for those more premium games, and those more premium games have to be what you include for these kind of subscription service. You can't include, I mean, you can, but they have to be for you to be able to actually sell the service. There needs to be a significant value there, and it needs to be filled with games that would generally cost $10, or $20 on the App Store or the Play Store. And that kind of ecosystem of $10-$20 games, it kind of barely exists on iOS, even as it stands, and it just basically doesn't exist on the Play Store. It seems like, I mean, there's tons of, not to say that those games at those price points don't exist on the Play Store. I just think that the data shows that those don't perform super well. And so when a similar service done by Google would not be able to attract the same attention and the same content that Apple is able to.
Bit of a thought experiment, and I'm comparing apples and oranges, but Apple Arcade versus Google Stadia. Like, in the short term, given like the lack of universal broadband in the US, for example, I think Apple Arcade is probably going to do better in terms of adoption, in terms of profitability.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty safe
bet. We'll get a little bit more to Stadia later, but I agree. I think Stadia, I'm not super optimistic about Stadia in general, for a lot of reasons. Not that I don't like the technology or like the service or, you know, think that it's
how the technology could be applied to other things.
For sure.
Like,
I think it's great. I just don't know. I'm not super optimistic about it being a kind of commercial success in the short term. But yeah, so I mean, and there was also the Apple Card, which I don't think we want to get into. Basically, it's a credit card. I mean, it's kind of a status symbol. I know you mentioned that you kind of want one just because of the status symbol.
Yeah, even though I don't.
Metal card.
And
no,
because it's
code,
titanium.
No number. You know, I don't know.
It looks so good.
I mean, to be fair, credit cards are a problem and they're just not great experiences. I mean, I have Discover, and Discover is like better than most, I think, in terms of being millennial friendly. And even it could use a little bit of disruption, I think. And I think that I really do think the Apple Card solves a lot of those problems. And I mean, I would want one.
You were a Google Wallet owner, right?
Yeah, I had Google Wallet.
Did you have a wallet?
Yeah, I had a wallet card, yeah. I have it somewhere sitting around
here. You
want
to summarize? What was the premise of that?
I mean, it's no different than having a...
Before my time.
I mean, if you have Square Cash right now, you can get a Square Cash card. It was no different than that. If you had Apple... If you had Google Wallet and you had funds in the account, basically, you could just use the card to spend the funds. That's the exact same thing as a Square Cash. Or
what
Cash
was the sell
app
of it? It was
card.
Online? I forgot. What was the appeal of that card? It was just Google.
Yeah, I mean, there was really... Online. I mean, there's a reason it got killed off, because I don't think it ever had a much of a practical purpose. I mean, it was really dependent on Google Wallet as a whole being the commercial success that other apps like Venmo and Cash App ended up becoming. Which it didn't.
Better name than Pay than Google Pay, in my opinion. I like Wallet. Yeah. The logo is nice.
Anyways, and then lastly, there was the Apple TV Plus service, which is kind of this, I don't know, it's they're trying to do what people have wanted for a decade, which is unbundle everything as much as possible and, you know, only pay for the TV channels and the services that you actually want to have, which is fine. I don't really have any thoughts on it. I didn't watch the event, haven't been tuned in, so that's my... I'm sure our listeners will be happy to hear that, given my supposed track record of being an Apple fanboy. I don't know. But obviously, Apple's putting tons of cash in this that Google's not. And that's, as Google fans that we are, it's unfortunate to see that Google's not really going to be in this game at all, it seems like.
Yeah. So, and the last part of that is, of course, the content thing. It's interesting how the Apple TV Plus is, well, Apple TV and Apple TV Plus are these two very same thing, same name, similar branding, rather. And, of course, the big content push from Apple as well. Yep.
So, going back a little bit to something we were talking about earlier when we were talking about the Pixel Slate, and kind of Google's seems like a little bit of a pullback from their laptop and tablet efforts. This is a report that actually came out of, where did it come out of? I forgot.
Business Insider.
So BI occasionally has some pretty good Google scoops. And this month, their scoop was that Google has apparently laid off a decent chunk of people in their laptop / tablet create division under Google Hardware, under Rick Osterloh.
Interesting name.
Interesting name. I've never heard that name before, and it doesn't really make much sense. But
feels like
whatever.
No, it's like a verb.
Yeah, it sounds like software or something like that. But anyways, that report said that, you know, it seemed like some projects, we don't know what, but some projects have been canceled. And based off of, well, I guess the interesting thing that's happened in the wake of this report is that I think that combined with the fact that the Pixel Slate was just not a commercial success, it doesn't seem to be a commercial success, it doesn't seem like it's going to be, hasn't been well reviewed, doesn't seem like, it's not a very much loved product, unfortunately. It's kind of living in that same space that the Pixel C lived in, It's just a new Pixel C.
And the Pixel C looked nice.
But yeah, so I think that report with this, with the, just the reality of the Pixel slate, has caused a lot of headlines that are like Google is killing off the Pixel book. we saw a headline. I won't name names, but there was a site that said something about Google's killing off the Pixel book, and here's why that's a good thing or something. And it's like, well, one, no, they're not killing off the Pixel book. And two, I don't think that would be a good thing. And I don't think any premise for arguing that that's a good thing could be well reasoned. Yeah, that's basically what's happened. And I just do want to push back, and I pushed back earlier on Twitter on just this idea that the Pixel slate, I mean, well, the Pixel book or even the Pixel slate, so laptops or tablets, are really going anywhere. I feel like I would characterize this report about Google kind of laying, not kind of, but laying off lots of their these personnel. I would characterize it more as like kind of just pumping the brakes a little bit and not making a U-turn.
Yeah.
And I think that pumping the brakes is a little bit justified when you have teams of dozens of engineers who put out something like the Pixel Slate. You know, like whenever you have a product that bombs as spectacularly as the Pixel Slate seems to have bombed, then I think pumping the brakes a little bit is a wise move. And I think people are rather interpreting this to mean that, you know, Google has completely decided that there's no value in doing laptops and tablets. And I just don't think that's the case at all.
No. The specific wording of the BI report was people were being reassigned. So Google's not firing people in mass or anything. They were employees of that create division were told to find other jobs in the company. So, and more importantly, not all projects, some tablet laptop things are still in development within that division, within Google Hardware.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very big point. I think this is one thing that a lot of people don't understand is that there's lots of devices and projects and prototypes that never reach they never even reach being 1 year out from launch. You know, it's like there's a series of green lights that products have to get all the way from being just an idea on a whiteboard all the way to being something that launches. And in that process, there could be, I don't know, there could be half a dozen tablet projects that are being kind of envisioned or thought about or even being worked on, maybe even a dozen tablet projects, you know, like that never reach even the hardware prototype stage. That Google could be pulling the plug on that, like, you know, they may have put lots of fire on this lap or lots of gasoline on this fire of the tablet and laptop division under the assumption that maybe the Pixel slate was going to go well. And if they did, it would have been a good thing that they had a couple more tablets in the works, you know, like it would be a really good thing for them to be planning, you know, a variety of smaller and larger devices with different form factors. And, you know, like, it seems like they kind of maybe, our interpretation of this is that, you know, there may have been six tablet projects and three or four of them have been canceled. That still leaves a successor to the Pixel slate potentially in the cards, you know? And on the laptop side, I would assume, given the commercial success, it seems like, of the Pixel book, both in terms of critic reviews and just, it seems like it sold well. I don't know what the actual numbers and the data are on that off the top of my head, but I would guess that the laptop division or the laptop side of things is not really suffering many cuts at all.
Yeah, that BI report said that there are still projects in development, and one that we've been tracking is this Pixelbook 2, codenamed Atlas.
We think is a Pixelbook 2.
Our Kyle Bradshaw tells us that it's still in development, so that could be one of the things coming out in the near term, being the end of the year.
Yeah, we feel really confident about that one being a Google product too. I mean, we had almost as much evidence that laptop or convertible was a Google product. As far back as October, we had just as much evidence that that was going to be a Google product as the Pixel Slate. And we know how the Pixel Slate turned out, but You know, we thought there was even enough evidence for that laptop that we thought it might launch this past fall, alongside the Pixel Slate. I mean, that was a genuine possibility because there was just that much evidence. So this is a almost surefire actual Google product that's launching this fall, in my opinion, because we, as Kyle has mentioned, we have seen it continually being worked on, in the code. So,
yes.
So yeah.
The Pixel Slate. I think we have some more things to say. Oh yeah, about that.
On the Pixel Slate too. Another thing that, who was it that noticed this? Was it what? How did this story come about? I forgot. Was it you?
So last week I saw this ad.
Oh, that's
from
what
Google
it was,
Store.
Yeah.
Yep, this ad that was promoting the Pixel Slate, which is a very targeted ad for me. Anyways, it said the starting price is $7.99. Pixel Slate from the Google Store from $7.99. And that comes as as early as this year, January around CES, we spotted that the entry level Pixel Slates at $5.99 and $6.99 running Celeron processors were still out of stock. Since launch, some people were able to pre-order them, then they went out of stock. And since November, when the device is launched, people haven't been able to buy them.
Yeah, so, I mean, we documented this previously, that these two devices, the $5.99, $6.99 variants, which are both Celeron models of the Pixel Slate, which Google announced back at its October 9th event in the fall. These devices, I mean, it seems like they were available for pre-order when the pre-orders opened, and then they might have been available publicly on the store for purchase for a day or a week. I don't know. We do know that some people ended up with them. We do know that some people ended up with them that did not get them from Google PR. So Google sold at least, I don't know, how many, five? I don't know. We've seen them in the wild. They exist. They've been reviewed. There's this theory that, I mean, one of the people, obviously notable people that reviewed this device, specifically this entry level Pixel Slate, was Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, over on YouTube. And that video was, you know, oh man, it was brutal. Like the description of the video was, do not buy the Celeron Pixel Slate under no circumstances, basically. Like, that was basically his gist for the review, which is not a good look for Google's hardware division. Obviously, Marques has long had a good standing or a good relationship with Google, and they've worked together. He's done interviews with various execs over the last several years, and, you know, like, he has an ongoing relationship with Google, and he's very influential in the space, obviously, being the largest tech YouTuber. Or one of the largest, if he's not the largest anymore. I haven't kept track with that, but so there's this crackpot theory that as soon as his video went up and someone higher up at Google saw it, they just like pulled the plug on the $5.99, $6.99 Celeron Pixel Slates, because the performance, as Marques showed in his video, was just sad. So, yeah, we basically noted that these have been out of stock and, you know, unavailable for purchase since day one, essentially, for the last 4 months. Google maintains in its statement that these devices are simply out of stock and they will be coming back. And they just won't say when, and they don't know when. But that just seems unlikely to me. If you launch a consumer product and you announce it in front of the world, and then you don't sell it for the first 4 months of its commercial availability, like, you just don't sell it. Not to mention that third parties don't sell it either. You know, like, it's not available on Amazon or Best Buy. It's not just a Google Store thing. Like, the $5.99 and $6.99 Pixel Slates just literally have not been available to buy, like, at all. So it's not exactly news. This has been a thing since November, but. Seems like this product is dead, which I guess, I don't know. It's interesting because $5.99 pits it more against the $400 or $500 level iPad price and less against the,
which
I don't know. Yeah. Which what?
Yeah. At $5.99 was never a consumer product. Let's be honest here. you could get so much more, so much better for $5.99 from a traditional Chromebook to a premium Chromebook,
to an iPad,
to some pretty good, to some pretty good Windows laptops, and especially after Apple announced that $4.99 iPad Air, which is really a pro, $5.99 was not a good look. So maybe it worked out for Google in the long run, but at the same time, like you were saying, it's not a good look.
Yeah, but I mean, none of the Pixel Slate price points make any sense. I mean, even the $7.99 price point for the M3 right now,
just an M3.
It's just an M3. First of all, but second of all, you can get a Core i5 Pixelbook for that price or cheaper, if you find it on sale at the right time. And it's like, I mean, just as a product, there are very few benefits. You know, like the Pixel Slate in the first place was a sidestep from the Pixelbook, not necessarily a successor, and so there's very few benefits, I think, if any. If I were a consumer, yeah, I just can't imagine recommending buying the M3 Pixel Slate over a Pixelbook at the same price. No. In any case. And it's unfortunate because... go ahead. What's up?
I was going to say, speaking of benefits, did Google gain anything from releasing the Pixel Slate? Did they learn any lessons that they can do better the next time? Or is the lesson, don't do this anymore?
I don't know. I would like to see a better Pixel Slate with better software, because I feel like that's the biggest crutch. I think the software, like using the Pixel Slate, which is supposed to be a tablet, as a tablet, is what makes it bad. So I would like to see a successor. To the Pixelbook in the Pixel Slate form factor with better software. I think that would solve a lot of the criticisms that it's had. And that's actually one interesting thing about the Celeron model, is that, so I personally am someone who never owned a Pixelbook. So I didn't get on the train in 2017 when the Pixelbook launched. I got my first Google Pixel laptop/convertible/tablet hardware with the Pixel Slate. So the Pixel Slate was basically my Pixelbook experience. I just never experienced the Pixelbook until recently. I guess around the time that I reviewed the Pixel Slate, actually. So for me, I used the Pixel Slate as a Pixelbook. I just, by the fact that the software sucks, I mean, just that alone kind of encouraged me to use it as a laptop and not as a tablet. And as a laptop, I don't think it's worse than the Pixelbook, with one exception. One, the price point's worse. Two exceptions. One, the price point's worse. And two, the keyboard situation. So there's no good keyboard option with the Pixel Slate. The one that you can buy from Google for $160 is like wobbly, and you can't use it on your lap. Otherwise, it's great. And the one that you can buy third party from Bridge is pretty good for using Pixel Slate as a laptop, but it sucks as a keyboard, in my opinion, or is not great typing experience. You've got those two trade-offs. Other than that, using the Pixel Slate if you can accept those trade-offs and you can just use the Pixel Slate as a Pixelbook on your desk with the Google made keyboard, which is way too expensive and I don't recommend anyone do it, but if you have that
and if
you have that already, if someone gifted it to you, I wouldn't return it. I don't know. I have that. Google basically gifted it to me to review it. You know, I have that device sitting on my lap on my desk, and I use it to work every day, and as a Pixelbook, as a Chrome OS laptop, I really enjoy it. I don't have any gripes. It's basically just like using a Pixelbook with those keyboard caveats, basically. And that's one thing I have to note about this whole Celeron situation, is that if that is the way you use a Pixel Slate, which is not the way that Google wants you to use the Pixel Slate at all, it's not the way it was marketed. It was marketed to be a tablet that goes against the iPad with the Pixelbook Pen and all these third-party apps that you can use to draw and make art and intersection of technology and the liberal arts, like Apple, you know, like that's the way it was marketed. All these Android apps that you can all use on this huge, beautiful molecular display, like that. It was marketed as an iPad competitor, to be very clear. Now, if you ignore that, if you ignore everything about what Google said about the product and you just use it as a Pixelbook, the Celeron model is fine, right? Because you're just using it as a Chrome OS laptop, and plenty of Chrome OS laptops have Celeron processors and they run fine. And so that's the interesting thing about this whole Celeron situation is that if Google had launched the Pixel Slate as a laptop or not marketed it as this whole, I guess, I don't know, tablet experience.
Replacement.
Anyways, I'm just saying, the way I use my Pixel Slate, having a Celeron would be perfectly fine, which would, if I were to be the person buying one, it would save me $400. So, anyways, that's my takeaway. It doesn't really mean anything, but it's an interesting note, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for that rant. I've had that on my chest for a little while.
It was perfect. It was perfect. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long the Pixel Slate lasts, if Google is just going to let it run its 2-year lifespan, assuming from fast Pixel Chrome OS devices, or whether we're going to get an earlier disappearance.
Yep. All right, so we're down to the last 20 minutes. This is the part of the show you've all been waiting for. Drum roll, please. We're going to talk about Google Stadia, I think, a little bit. There have been some little, before we get into the details, the thing that we've been teasing, these whole rumors about pricing, there have been some little details that have kind of, well, we've pulled out of various reports and interviews and stuff since the actual announcement. Maybe you can go over some of those things that we've learned since we actually talked last week about this, because it was very fresh on our minds and it was just right off of the event the day before.
Yeah, so Google did its usual press tour with the announcements. What was one of the more interesting things was how Stadia's minimum spec appears to have fallen to 15 megabits per second compared to 25 at the Project Stream demo. So that 10 requiring not requiring that high an internet connection is somewhat notable, and maybe that shows that how Google can maybe keep optimizing this further and further until it's a good experience for all users, depending on broadband. So I think that was a significant plus. And we got some more details about the Stadia controller, this first party made by Google game controller. So you can use it. You can likely use it as a USB-C, a wired, using a wired connection. Its Wi-Fi connection is directly connected to the Stadia servers. So I think Google undersold how much of a contained experience this controller could be on stage, and maybe we'll get a better demonstration of what it can do when it actually launches. But impressive concept, impressive hardware device. Maybe that will be this major sell of the service going forward.
Yeah, for sure. I agree on the controller. The controller is kind of, I think, I don't know, is a novel concept. Has anyone done this before where the controller, did OnLive do this? I don't think. You know, like these other services.
No, OnLive had the box.
These other services that have done, I mean, the NVIDIA one too, that have done this similar product. I don't think they've done the directly, like the controller itself is directly connected to the service via Wi-Fi, which allows for a lot of these experiences, like being able to just switch between screens at will, basically, and all these other things. And it should also help with the latency issue. So yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Some other early hands-on impressions said that it doesn't work as bad, that it's the usability is comfortable. So that's always an improvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people said, we didn't actually get to touch the controller at GDC, but apparently some people did. And apparently it feels pretty good, which is surprising from coming from Google, which has no experience with building this kind of product, but that's cool. Let's talk about price points. So we don't really, just disclaimer, we don't know really what the price points are going to be. We have one person, one source who has provided us information that's very preliminary based on early discussions. that they are aware of, and that's basically it. So we don't know. Obviously, Google's not going to be detailing any of this for many, many months. But we have heard a couple things about what the price points and what this might actually look like for consumers. And this whole conversation, I think we can first start talking about is we don't know, or we're kind of starting to get an idea of what direction is Google going to go with this? Are they going to charge for individual licenses? Are you going to be able, you know, are you going to be playing a game on or watching a video on YouTube, click into the game via Stadia, and then you get to play 30 minutes, and then it says to keep playing, you have to pay $49.99 or $59.99 to buy the full license just as you would on Steam. That's one avenue that obviously is an option that Google could go down. And then the other avenue is that it could be a Netflix-like subscription service, which I think the recurring revenue model is very popular and hot these days, as we've seen this week. And it's going to be, I think, for a lot of reasons, this model would be beneficial for Google. And I guess the third option is that, you know, there could be some kind of mix of both. So like you could have some kind of baseline subscription that's required just to use Stadia at all. And then as you access titles within the service, you would have to be making additional payments on top of that. That's, I guess, a third route that we could go. According to this tip that we received, again, based on early discussions that are very, very well may represent what Google launches in 6 months or not at all. Apparently, one thing that Google's considered is doing kind of a two-tiered subscription service where you can pay a lower price. Let's say the number that we were given was $20 a month, where you could basically have access to unlimited games, but they would be older games. So they would be current gen games, I guess, like games that are not super hot, I guess, like games that are still AAA titles, but they're not the latest games. And then apparently there's like a higher tier option, which we could say is $30, which would give you access to everything. So you're getting access to the most premium games on the day that they release. And it's unlimited. It would be Netflix style. It would be, you know, you have access to everything, unlimited playtime, et cetera, et cetera. But you would basically be in two different tiers. The higher tier, you get access to literally all the AAA titles that actually are available on Stadia. That's a whole other conversation about what the catalog is going to look like, because this whole conversation could be moot if there's not any good games, which is still to be seen. But that's kind of the first, I guess, option, or the first thing we've heard that Google has considered for Stadia pricing, which is interesting because until now, we didn't know at all whether Google was even considering the Netflix model. So any initial thoughts on this, Abner?
I found it's the Netflix model. When Google is discussing how the YouTube integration especially, I think it seemed somewhat clear that Google is not taking this Netflix approach where everything was available for you, that there needs to be a more direct, you buy a game, that traditional concept of buying a game. I think it was very clear that, I thought anyways, that Google wasn't going to let you get access to everything for a single fee. It looks like they're not this tiered model. I think it's important for them to make money on it, to pay developers, which they promised was a big focus of Stadia, supporting developers, and ultimately make money on their end from all this infrastructure, massive infrastructure commitment.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I agree with you that I kind of got the sense that that's what they were suggesting. But on the other hand, I disagree that it was very clear. I don't think it was clear at all. I think they left it very vague. as vague as possible, because they aren't announcing it yet. You know, they didn't want to say anything that was going to directly tip off that this was going to be a Netflix style subscription service, nor did they, I don't think they wanted to say anything that was going to directly tip off that this was going to be, you're going to have to chuck up, you know, $60 for every game that you want to play.
Because the way I saw that was direct, like the idea of Google, how Google ads, how the ad systems work right now, Google getting a cut every single time you play. Of course, Google is doing more than just serving ads. They have this whole, they're the ones responsible for maintaining and upgrading this whole infrastructure in the back end. But I thought that like taking a cut of every single game was, that was how I saw the connection, the parallels.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think that as a consumer, me personally, I think that the monthly subscription model is more attractive. I have a Nintendo Switch. I buy all my games physical on that because I want to be able to resell, and I don't want all my digital goods to become worthless whenever I decide I don't want to own a Switch anymore, or the Switch becomes obsolete or whatever. Like, especially with Nintendo stuff, it's kind of like a collectible item in addition to being a game. Especially since Nintendo everything holds its value really well. You can buy a genuine original GameCube controller for like $200 on eBay because it's just, they're just rare. But anyways, so like I think for me personally, the idea of spending full price or even a discounted price for AAA titles on Stadia feels like I'm throwing money at the cloud to buy a digital good that, not that I'm against digital goods, or because, you know, there's plenty of benefits and conveniences that come with them, but I personally think would be more attracted to the idea of a subscription that I can use and I can pay for when I want to have that experience. Like I see Stadia as like an experience, you know, like everything together is all worth paying a subscription for. But purchasing games outright, I don't know if I would be attracted to that. I think that ruins it for me. Like, honestly, I think I would, if I'm going to pay $60 full price for a game, I would rather have an Xbox or a PlayStation 4 or whatever and pay the full price and have the physical copy on, or even the digital copy in those cases. I think that's another thing about Stadia too, is that like, I think the way they've pitched this experience is it's kind of
the future subscription model.
Well, no, it's kind of, it's like there's low commitment, right? So it's like you can be watching a video and it's like, oh, I feel like playing. It's like you can just, is ephemeral the right word? It's kind of like, you know, I feel like playing this game right now because I'm watching this cool video on YouTube. Click, I'm playing it in Stadia, right? Like that model doesn't work. Like the impulse to just be watching a video and just jump into the game, that doesn't work if you're having to put this gate of $60 every single time, right? Like, so I don't know. To me, it seems like the experience only works if you are paying that flat fee up front and it's like, okay, I get access to this whole world of stuff. I don't know. That's my take. I don't know if you agree with that, but that's just how it feels.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm still trying to reconcile how that idea of every link, I guess every link is a game, can be a game. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to reconcile that with how Google's current ads model work. Every time you click something, they earn, the publisher earns something, and Google themselves earns something. They take a cut from that. I guess that's how I'm thinking of Stadia's, like, business end of Stadia. But again, this is, I doubt we'll ever really find out officially what the product, what the cuts are.
Yeah, for sure.
What the business model.
Another thing we've heard is pricing on the controller itself, which is right in that sweet spot of exactly what you would expect. I mean, you can expect, we've heard apparently, you can expect that Stadia controller is going to cost about the same price as retail for Xbox or PlayStation 4 controllers.
Which are around $69 for the wireless,
right?
Full wireless thing. So yeah, it's not outrageous. There's no premium associated with it. It's
yeah. So I mean, controller. Let's say that. I'm curious. There's lots of people listening. Let us know in the comments on YouTube, or more preferably, I guess, over on 95google.com for this post for Alphabet Scoop. Let us know if Stadia was to cost this $20 or $30 tiered subscription service plus the $50, $60, whatever price for the controller.
Which is optional.
Optional, as mentioned, because you can use any controller. What do you think about that? What is that a good price point? Do you think that you know would get you to sign up? Would it be too much, too little? I mean, another huge factor of Stadia as a whole. We don't know what the game catalog is going to look like at launch or in the mm-hmm. future, and that could really change this conversation. If it launches with 30 games and they want $30 a month, then you know, that might be a tough sell. If they launch with 150 games, then that might be a little easier. Let us know what you think in the comments. And I think that pretty much wraps the show. I'm excited. I think that, I mean, for me personally, $20 a month for Stadia would be pretty tempting. I don't know. What about you?
And those premium games.
Too bad. I mean, my internet connection's like barely good enough to use it. So that's a whole other conversation. Lots of factors with this.
Yeah. The tiering, now that I think about it, the tiering model is suspiciously close to how YouTube Music Premium and how YouTube Premium work. One higher tier gets you more. So yeah. Maybe that's where they're drawing inspiration from. Google's only existing services model.
For sure, for sure. All right, well, I think we'll leave the show there. We're cutting it off a little bit early, but I think we've had some pretty good conversations. Let us know again in the comments what you think of all this Stadia stuff. And until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning on all of your favorite podcasting platforms like iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, which this is the part of the show where I just drop the latest Google Podcast news. Apparently, the Google Podcasts web app Android Police found evidence that they're actually starting to do transcriptions. So at some point now or soon, you should be able to search for things that we're talking about in this episode and actually surface the things that we're talking about. So theoretically, in this example, you'd be able to search for Stadia price point on Google, and our podcast should, or in Google Podcasts. And this episode should, in theory, it should show up. So that's cool.
Get ready for verbal SEO. I promise you. There's going to be whole guides about how to speak to optimize your SEO.
Google Podcast SEO. That's the next step for sure.
Oh, that's not going to be fun for
anybody. Okay, yeah, you can also find us in Google Play, and you can definitely listen over at 95google.com directly if that's the way you'd like to do that. Thanks for tuning in as always, and thanks to Abner for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Later.